My name's Daisha Rhodes, in case you don't know me. Is there anybody that's here for the very first time? Okay. Then you know Pastor Rob, hopefully everybody does. He asked me to speak this morning. He is speaking somewhere else. And it's always an honor for me to be able to do this, because even when I think I don't, I always end up finding some kind of morsel that I feel like I'm led to share. And this is one of those times. We just got back from vacation, and I didn't really think about this the whole time whenever I was there, but then whenever I came back, didn't have a choice because this day was creeping upon me. So I was able to listen to a couple of things, and that's where I received what I'm going to share with you this morning. So how many of you were read to as a child? How many of you still like to read on your own today? Okay. Yeah, I would much rather be read, not read to anymore. I liked that whenever I was younger, but I don't particularly like being read to as an adult, which that doesn't happen very often. I am going to read to you a little bit today, though. but the reason why I'm bringing that up is because stories are, they can be special. I can think of a couple that meant a lot to me, like the monster at the end of this book, which was Grover. Was it Grover? It was a Sesame Street book, I think. There's some that stand out in my head, but this book, the Bible, is filled with stories. And Jesus was a storyteller. He also was a healer. And he expressed love in a great capacity everywhere we went, and we know that we're supposed to be like him. So stories have creativity to them. Some stories end up turning into plays. Some stories become movies. How many of you know that a book is usually better than a movie? I'm always really disappointed when I watch a movie. You can't watch the movie and then read the book, in other words, is what I'm trying to say. You have to read the book first, and then the movie usually sheds like a different kind of light on things. But stories reach us. They reach into our heart. They reach into our soul. Most of the time, they provide enjoyment. Sometimes they can even be life-altering. I'm the first one to admit that, learning the Bible stories in my childhood, I can't really stand up here and say and pick a story out and say, oh, this was life-altering. This changed my life forever. Like, Noah's Ark didn't change my life forever. If anything, it made me think, how on earth did we fit all those things onto that one boat? Okay, because we know how many species of animals and things are in the world. And I can't talk about that whole lot, because then I'll start thinking about it, and then I won't stop thinking about it. Then I'll try to figure it out and pick it all apart. And you never can, because how many of you know that everything in this book, there's still a mystery to it all? We're not supposed to know everything. But we get a lot of knowledge out of here. So some examples of that are the shepherd searching for his lost sheep, the Good Samaritan. How many of you know that story? We know Zacchaeus, the wee little man that was up in the tree. There was a song about him. Noah, Jonah, and on and on. Jesus told many stories, and he was a healer that drew the crowds by storytelling and healing. So I'm going to share some stories with you this morning. These are not my stories, my personal stories, but we all, everybody here, I guarantee you, has some sort of a story that will resonate with the stories that I'm going to tell. These are stories of hope where there seemed to be none. I did not think I was going to get emotional with what I have today. So bear with me, because for some reason, whenever we were singing that last song, when you think about how much we're blessed and how many things we're given and the beauty and the gifts that are around us everywhere we go, it is extremely overwhelming. But we get so caught up in the busyness of life that we forget about all these things. So most importantly, the stories I'm going to tell you are going to show you people that were once one way, and throughout the story became another way. So I'm talking about rebirth and transformation. Those are the big words. But it could be the simplest of things. So these are people that were once one way and then became another. They were transformed or reborn. And I'm going to start with a familiar name that we are all aware of, Nicodemus. Raise your hand if you know who Nicodemus is. Okay, Nathan, you can put up that image of Jesus and Nicodemus from The Chosen. If you've seen this series, this is probably, even with all the episodes that were out, this particular scene is still my favorite. So a little background on Nicodemus. He was a Pharisee, so that group of people constantly doubted that Jesus was the Messiah. They did not like what he was doing. Pharisees were a pretty serious group of people. He was a famous scholar. He was a theologian. So they were taught a certain way. That's the only line of thinking that they could follow, because that's all they thought was that was their reality. So you couldn't veer from that. However, he was constantly watching what this man from Nazareth was doing. And Nicodemus was no dummy. In fact, he was so intelligent that by observing the things that he was watching Jesus do, a little twinkle, something sparked in him where he had to seek out this man, which was frowned upon by the Pharisees, because the Pharisees said, that is not who that is. He is not our king. He is not the Messiah. They doubted him and doubted him. But he had to know, Nicodemus had to know, that there was something more to this man from Nazareth, and he had to find out. He had to find out. So there were no other options for Nicodemus. He was now on a journey to seek answers from this man. Now, in order to keep himself protected, he met Jesus privately in the night. Okay, I don't know how many of you remember him kind of creeping around, you know, in the night to meet Jesus, because he's not technically supposed to be meeting this man who's not the king, who's not the Messiah. So I'm going to read John chapter 3 to you from the Message Bible. I happen to like this version. I looked at a couple other ones online. I don't like them as much because I think they throw in their own stuff in there. But anyway, that's besides the point. The title of this chapter, John 3, is called Born from Above. There was a man of the Pharisee sect, Nicodemus, a prominent leader among the Jews. Late one night, he visited Jesus and said, Rabbi, we know you're a teacher straight from God. Now, these are the things that he was starting to think, because still, he was a little bit doubtful. But he had, like I said, this something was stirring in his spirit. Remember, all human beings were created by him. We all have a part of him, no matter what kind of place we come from, no matter what type of group of people, no matter what you do. So keep that all in mind, because we're all his children. Jesus said, you're absolutely right. Take it from me. Unless a person is born from above, it's not possible to see what I'm pointing to God's kingdom. How can anyone, said Nicodemus, how can anyone who has already been born go back into the mother's womb and then be born again? What are you saying, born from above? So the language that Jesus is speaking to Nicodemus sounds nuts. Okay, me saying it right now kind of sounds nuts too. I mean, it sounds weird. Jesus was a little bit weird. I'm down with that too. So Jesus said, you're not listening to me. Let me say it again. Unless a person submits to this original creation, the wind hovering over the water creation, the invisible moving the visible, a baptism into a new life, it's not possible to enter God's kingdom. When you look at a baby, it's just that. It's a baby. It's a body you can look at and touch. But the person takes shape. The spirit helps move that little child into a toddler, into a juvenile, into an adult. And then it becomes a living spirit. So don't be surprised when I tell you that you have to be born from above. You know well enough how the wind blows this way and that. You hear it rustling through the trees, but you don't know where it actually comes from or where it's headed next. That's the way it is with everyone, born from above by the wind of God and the Spirit of God. Now, I have read that, I have heard that, but it was with new eyes I read that again, because we know the wind. We know what it is. We know what it feels like. We know the air. We know we breathe it. But we know who created it. We don't know where it comes from. It's just here, because that's part of creation. Nicodemus asked, "What do you mean by this? How does this happen?" And Jesus said, "You're a respected teacher of Israel and you don't know these basic facts? Listen, I'm speaking sober truth to you. I speak only of what I know by experience, and I give witness only to what I have seen with my own eyes. There is nothing secondhand here. Yet instead of facing the evidence and accepting it, you are procrastinating with questions. If I tell you things that are as plain as the hand before your face, and you don't believe me, what use is there in telling you of things you can't see, which are the things of God?" So, you've heard this a million times. We can't see him, but he's working. You know, it's like that, you know, that phrase, you can't see him, but he's working. You can't see it, but he's working. Sometimes he's working. A lot of times he's working, and we don't have to do anything. Just sit back and enjoy the ride. You might not see it. You might not know it. And you might see somebody that you think needs to be different and go through this transformation, but it may not be your job to get them there. This is how much God loved the world. He gave his son, his one and only son, and this is why. How many times have we heard this? So that no one need be destroyed. By believing in him, anyone can have a whole and lasting life. God did not go to all the trouble of sending his son to point an accusing finger. He came to help, to put the world right again. And anyone who trusts in him is acquitted. Anyone. Anyone who refuses to trust him, we know what happens there. There's trials, there's journeys that you have to go on. Once you are one way, and then you become another. So I started with Nicodemus because after that one encounter with Jesus, Nicodemus' life was never the same. It was never the same. Nicodemus is, you can tell he's not a young buck there, okay? He's an elderly man. So he went through most of his existence, most of his life, only believing one way of thinking, because that's what he was taught was right. One conversation with Jesus, showing love and compassion, even though he was asking a bunch of goofy questions, Jesus answered all of them. One instance changed this scholarly, intelligent theologian for the rest of his life. He was never the same again. Everything he knew, he had to rethink. How many of you know how hard that is to do? You're taught one whole way, and then all of a sudden, you have to rethink it all, because guess what? You maybe were wrong. And some people are not lifelong learners. There are some people that, I'm a teacher, so to me, learning and educating yourself is extremely important. You need to do it all the time. I don't care who you are, but there are people that don't think that way, and they'd rather just be a brick on the floor and only be like this. This is how it is. I'm not changing my mind. I don't care what anybody else says. This is it. Well, that isn't right. I'm sorry. The Bible helps us grow. Jesus shows us little things on a daily basis. You need to be able to be like clay. That's what we are. We're in the potter's hands. We need to constantly be changing. We don't want to stay one way. But his entire theology was turned on its head after this one encounter. And this is a big deal, but Nicodemus did it. Did the Pharisees help get rid of Jesus? Yes, they did. But did you know that Nicodemus purchased 100 pounds of the most precious spices? He cleared out the marketplace. He cleared out the marketplace because that's the amount of money, and those were the amount of spices that you needed to bury a king. Did they kill Jesus? Yes. Did Nicodemus know who he was? Absolutely. By doing that with the spices, that was Nicodemus' way of saying, you are worthy, King. That's my first example. And I have many others, so here we go. Are you ready for this? So I'm going to get out of the, hopefully a little bit away from the emotional, but I'm going to share some other examples of stories that there was transformation. So somebody was one way and then they became another. Stories of when someone is not how they should be, but through a series of events, they change their ideas or just what happened to them. So how many of you have seen the Minions movies? The first one. You know, big old Gru. He's a nasty, kind of ugly character. Sorry. And the Minions were like the comedy part of that, but the little girls in that movie softened Gru's heart. And he ended up taking them in. And how many of you saw the most recent one? He's like awestruck with their kids, and he has a little boy, and it's just great. So he was once one way and then became another. The Grinch who stole Christmas. We know what happened. Everybody knows that story. His heart grew three times, and he ended up saving Christmas instead of destroying it. You can probably sit there and come up with a bunch of other stories, whether it be, you know, modern film or old. There's a ton. There's also many books. But I'm going to switch gears a little bit here. When I was in high school, you had to take a language. I think they still do that. And just to give you a little bit of a kind of a funny background, I took French. The teacher was, she was like way over the top serious. I mean, and I give her a lot of credit because we were not the greatest to her. And because she was too serious and we were goofy and silly and a little strange, but we kind of gave her a run for her money. But we joined the French club. And one of the field trips that we raised money for to go to was to Seton Hill College. And at that time, they were putting on a musical that was popular in the 80s. It's a French musical called Les Miserables. How many of you have seen this or saw the movie or have heard of it at least? You can put that image up, Nathan. Now, I'm the first one to admit that I can stand here and I can tell you what I wore that day. I was in ninth grade. I can tell you what I wore, how my hair was fixed, the shoes I had on. I can tell you about the bus ride because that's whenever O.J. Simpson was running from the police. And it was on the radio. If you're young, you have no idea what I'm talking about. The rest of us do, okay? I just was going to this play because it was the field trip out of the school, and I got to wear a dress with a little patent leather belt and, you know, all that stuff. I will tell you firsthand that during the actual play, I remember laughing and carrying on and not paying much attention at all to people hopping around on stage, because quite frankly, I didn't care. The songs were, a lot of it was in French, and I didn't really understand it. However, I watched some of the movie not a couple of years ago, and it still, I mean, it resonated with me, but not as much as it does right now. You can probably translate that on your own. The Miserables, Miserable. It's a very, kind of a dark play. How many of you have seen the play production? Okay. So, Les Mis got popular in the 80s. The nickname for it is Les Mis. It's an iconic play. It won a Tony Award. Victor Hugo, it's based off of his book that was written in 1862. It takes place in the French countryside between 1815 and 1832. If you don't like me giving you these facts, I'm sorry. I like strange, odd information. Take it or leave it. Maybe the only thing you remember about today's service is French countryside 1815. At least you got something. It was one of the world's longest-running musicals. And one of the main characters is Jean Valjean, okay? And I'm going to give you some background on him because this is important. So Jean is a convict. He spent 19 years in a French prison for a horrible, horrible crime of breaking a bakery window and stealing a loaf of bread to feed his starving sister's children. I'll let you think about that for a second. Because don't think this stuff just happens then. It happens right now. He's released from prison. He's wandering the streets. Nobody gives him the time of day because they recognize him as a criminal. And they know he's a convict, so nobody wants to be around him because back then you don't associate yourself with these types of people. So he walks around for 4 days. He's tired. He's starving. He's dirty. He lays down on a bench and he's trying to go to sleep, and a lady approaches him and says to him, "You need to go see the bishop. He will help you." There's a part in the movie where he walks by a church and like shakes his fist because he really doesn't want anything to do with it because of all of the trials and tribulations he has gone through because of being in prison for all that time. But the lady tries to tell him, "Jean, the bishop is a good man. And his name is Bishop Bienvenu. And that last name in French means welcome. So Bishop, welcome." So Jean Valjean goes to the bishop and immediately walks to the bishop and tells him, "I was in the prison for 19 years, I'm a convict," and, you know, wants to spew all this information out at him. And the bishop says to him, "There's no need to tell me who you are. There is no need to tell me who you are. I already know who you are. You are my brother." This was the first bit of kindness and compassion anyone has shown Jean Valjean at this time. So he goes into the bishop's house, and there's a scene in the movie that I'm getting ready to show you in just a minute, but I want you to just visualize this before. This is like reading the book before you watch the movie. That's what I'm doing with you right now, except I'm the book, and I'm reading it to you, okay? So there's a table. It's a big feast of food, and everything on the table, plates of silver, the candlesticks were made out of silver, all of the decor and everything, real expensive stuff, okay? All of his finest silver plates. And this is Jean's first real meal in 19 years. So, of course, he's probably starving, and, you know, when you're that hungry and you're looking at all this food, you probably eat like an animal, okay? But kindness and compassion is shown by Bishop Welcome. You can show the clip, Nathan. Okay, so here's your recap, if you didn't understand why I showed that. Bishop Welcome served him food. Jean Valjean went to bed that night. He was tormented. You saw him looking at that painting. Tormented because he knew if he could just take all that silver and leave, he could get money for it and survive. And instead of doing the right thing, he chose to still steal the silver. And he was apprehended and brought back into the bishop's house. The men said, "Here's your silver back." You know, he stole the stuff. And the bishop said, "Oh no, I gave him those. In fact, you forgot these 2 candlesticks of silver." And he said to him, "Jean, my brother, you belong no longer to evil but to good. It is your soul that I am buying for you, and I withdraw it from the dark thoughts and from the spirit of perdition, and I give it to God." And if you watch the whole play, you know there is a transformation in Jean Valjean. And you know that the bishop symbolizes welcome. I mean, he is the epitome of that. He's also the epitome and showing what Jesus would have done there. So he was transformed and reborn. The next book that I'm going to talk about is called, now I will be 100% honest with you, I have never touched this book. I have never read this book. I never heard of this book until like last week or something, okay? So I don't know every little thing about it, but we have this wonderful thing called the internet that sheds light on many, many things. How many of you have heard of the book The Gulag Archipelago? Really? I was hoping at least one person. I had two people in mind that I thought maybe would raise their hand. But I was hoping that somebody would. This book is by Alexander Solzhenitsyn. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. Something like that. Did you say it? Solzhenitsyn. Thank you. I even wrote it out like how I do for people with my name, and I still didn't do it right. Nathan, could you put up the black and white image of that gentleman, please? Solzhenitsyn. Okay. That is who this gentleman here is. This is another example of transformation. And I'm just going to refer to him as Alexander. I'm not going to say his last name every single time. Okay, he wrote the book. It is about his time spent in a gulag. How many of you know what that is? It's a prison, okay, which I'm sure you probably could figure out. It's a labor camp. He served 8 years as a prisoner there. He went into the prison as a communist and as an atheist. And the reason why he was imprisoned is because he had made a joke about Stalin's mustache, and someone saw it or got a hold of it or some kind of something. And I'm sure there was a million other things, but he was imprisoned at that camp. While he was there, he was able to converse with somebody that had faith. That faith was shared with him. His faith was restored. And he explains his transformation in the book. I guess it's a really, really big book. Yeah. And how many of you, you probably have already gone through this. We have all been, I don't want to say a similar situation, because that is absolutely not doing these individuals justice, because I've never been in a labor camp. However, there have been times in my life, and I'm sure in yours, where it felt like that. And I'm not making light of this by any means. But you can choose to allow that to affect you in a negative way, or you can choose to allow that to affect you in a positive way. And it may be negative for a time, but you can always come out a little better on the other end, or you can help somebody. So he was able to lay in there, and I'm sure it was dirty. I mean, I don't know that it sounds the word gulag just made me think of something disgusting, because it sounds gross. So he had time to dwell and think in there, and he thought to himself, how does a human become evil, and how does a human then become good? That's a question I'm sure we'd all love an answer to. He describes how, in most of his evil moments, that he was convinced that he was doing something that was right, which, unfortunately, sometimes that's the case, especially with people that have a tiny little bit of the P word. Do you know what the P word is? Power. And this is not verbatim by any means, so I'm not reading from the book, but he thought and thought about this, and then gradually it was disclosed to him, these things. So the line separating good and evil passes not through states, nor between classes, nor between political parties, but right through every single human heart and through all human hearts. It's there, lingering. It's impossible to expel evil from the world in its entirety, but it is possible. It is possible to restrict it a little in each individual. And obviously you have a lot of control over that. And he was actually quoted as saying, and this happens a lot, "Bless you, prison. I nourished my soul there. And I say without hesitation, bless you, prison, for having been in my life." Now, what does that mean? That means his life was transformed in that dark place. You can't have darkness without what? And you cannot have light without what? They work together. He was transformed there. He was changed there. He was reborn there. I'm going to give you one example, and then I have just one more little nugget, and then I'll close. And I didn't plan on giving this one, but she popped into my head, so I have to talk about her. That's not anybody here. But I follow a ultra runner. She's a mountain runner. Her name's Sally McRae. I don't know if anybody's ever heard of her before. But Sally is just your average human being. She does have a little bit of a following now online. She's 44 years old, so she's 45. She's 2 years older than me. And I resonate with her because I also am part of the trail running community, and I look up to her as an example. And I didn't know a whole lot about her when I first stumbled across her. But last summer, I purchased her memoir. And it wasn't a very long book, but it'll just change your whole outlook on life. And Sally always grew up in church. She went to church every Sunday. She sat beside her dad and her mother and the rest of her family. But when they left the church structure and went home, she was the punching bag, literally, for her father. So there were several children, but Sally caught the brunt of his physical abuse. He would use the P word, and everything was taken out on her. When I say abuse, it's pretty severe, like going to school with a chunk of your hair missing, that type of thing, and never telling anybody. The only people that knew about it were the people that were in under her roof. Now, how many of you know that the stereotypical individual that goes through a situation like that goes down a dark path? Almost always. She chose the light. She's an exception, I'm telling you, because it's not always the case. So her transformation is a little bit different because she always knew the light. And she knew in her heart that the light doesn't beat her. The light doesn't pull her hair. The light is a healer. The light is a giver. So she chose to shine that light every single day. Now, I'm sure she has horrific days, but you will never, ever, ever see a single word from her mouth in writing, in a video, on television, anywhere out there that is not shining light. I have not gone through that, but I'm going to tell you right now, it would take every single bit of my being to be that positive. But she knows the light. She knew the healer even when she was being beat. She knew the healer when there was no food on their table. She had to grow up pretty quickly because her mom passed away. Her mother was only 40 years old, and I think Sally was only 16 or 17. So she had to care for her family. It was one of those kind of deals. And eventually a family next door kind of took them in. She was able to get a scholarship for soccer. She went to college, and then fast forward, she has a beautiful family, a wonderful life. And she chooses to share. She chooses to share God's love. So, like I said at the beginning, the gospel is a story of rebirth and of transformation. And sometimes, if we have a wonderful life, some of us have not gone through big major things. And that's all right. Some of us have. And that's okay too. It doesn't make you any less or any more than anybody else. So just remember, we're always equals. But always know that whether we seek him out or not, he is there. Seeking him is going to help you tremendously. But he doesn't leave us, no matter how desperate or dire the situation is, as you could see in the examples that I gave. Mary Magdalene, she was possessed with the demons. She then became the apostle of the apostles. Nicodemus, Zacchaeus. Zacchaeus is kind of on the other end of the spectrum. You know, I thought of him as like a short, really little person. I mean, I don't really know. I don't know if he was, but that's how he was portrayed. And then how about Saul? We know that Saul was blinded by the light because he was, no, Jesus, no, 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 no. Denied all that, was blinded by the light. He was in such shock and horror because he was blinded by the light that he didn't eat. He was transformed, right? How many of you have somebody in your family or somewhere named Paul? Or a middle name? Paul. Chances are that that person probably knew that individual from Scripture. That's another example of transformation. Our stories our rebirth and transformation. And sometimes it doesn't happen once. Maybe I'm not one of those people that remembers the day they were saved. Okay, I don't remember that. I think there's a reason why I don't, because to me, we're saved all the time. We are reconnecting with him all the time. So I don't have like a date written down. Okay, because seeking him out and allowing him to transform you on a daily, maybe it's yearly, I don't know, whatever it is for you, is what we need to be doing. And we need to be continually growing in his love. And I know that sounds so super simple, but it isn't. It isn't, especially today. Because there's too much noise, entirely too much noise. But just remember that we have to allow ourselves to grow. We're on a continuous journey. Think of yourself as a plant. We can have a new start. We have a choice to become better than what we were. Maybe we need to do that after we leave here today. I don't know. And always remember that our destiny is who we are meant to be. We have to keep working towards that. And this involves changing things, maybe deep in your soul, leaving the old and moving on to the new, but doing all things in love. And one of my favorite things is this. Beauty is a word that we hear or see a lot. And, you know, we have another word, ugly, that's, you know, that's negative. And some things we might think are ugly, like a cicada casing after they climbed out, or I don't think it is, but some people may. But think of the transformation that happened there. Or a gross little caterpillar that turned into a butterfly. Or moth larvae are usually really ugly and they turn into moths. But beauty is in all things. All living things, it's in all of us, whether we want to realize that or not. It's in every human being because we are part of his creation. It's all around us. It's in every situation, no matter how awful and ugly the situation is. Somewhere in there is beauty. You just need to open your eyes first, and the most important thing you need to open is your heart. So, I'm going to close with prayer. Thank you for going through this with me today. I hope that it meant a little bit of something to you. And if it didn't, like I said, I'm a teacher, and I'm okay with that. There'll be a quiz next time. No, I'm just kidding. So if you could just, you don't need to bow your heads, but if you could just close your eyes with me, please. Dear Heavenly Father, there are truly not enough words in our language that are adequate to express our love for you. But I know you know our hearts. Each and every person in here is a gift, is a beautiful gift. And I pray that after today and from here on out, we realize the beauty in us. Not only in us, but the beauty in every walking life. And that we find ways through you that we can touch others. That we can love on others. That we can be more patient and see through the hard, ugly shells of some others into their hearts, into their pain, so that we can sympathize and empathize and give that love that you have so freely given us by giving your Son. We praise you and thank you in Jesus' holy name.